You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Will the real MVP please stand up? We used a variation of that expression, will the real King James please stand up, when James Harden at Toyota Center in a nationally televised spotlight game outdueled LeBron James a couple of weeks ago. Now we're bringing it back because in the Christmas Day matinee, Merry Christmas, by the way, against 2016-2017 MVP Russell Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team that entered with the second best record in the Western Conference going into Christmas, the Rockets, led by James Harden, outdueled Westbrook and got the win. It's the seventh for the Rockets in their last eight games, and they are now three games over 500 at 18-15 for the first time this season. It's been a long road back, and while the Rockets aren't in 65-win juggernaut form again, they are all of a sudden looking very, very healthy with back-to-back wins, quality ones, against the Spurs on Saturday and now against the Thunder on this Tuesday, Christmas Day. With that, welcome in to another episode, a holiday edition at that, of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat on this Christmas night on Tuesday, December 25th, of course, we're going to be recapping the big win 113-109 that the Rockets posted over Russell Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder on Christmas Day. James Harden, the reigning MVP for the Rockets in a battle of the league's last two MVPs, bested Russell Westbrook. Harden with 41 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. Russell Westbrook, 21 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists on just 6 of 20 from the field. Some fantastic defense from newcomer Austin Rivers, especially down the stretch. We'll talk about him as we move our way through our usual 3 points recap. We'll also have plenty on James Harden, who is averaging nearly 40 points per game over this ridiculous stretch the last couple of weeks. Had yet another 40-point game again on Christmas. But I'm actually going to discuss him more in segment two, because the far and away lead story for the Rockets in terms of what's different for this team, especially the last two games, is the rebounding. And it starts with Clint Capela, back-to-back games with 23 rebounds, posted 21 and 23 against the San Antonio Spurs on Saturday, then followed it up with 16 and 23 against Steven Adams and the Oklahoma City Thunder on Christmas. And for the game as a whole, the Rockets actually out-rebounded Oklahoma City 54 to 52. And even though James Harden put up 41, to me it was the defense, it was the rebounding that led the way. The Rockets had their best defensive quarter in the fourth, limiting Oklahoma City to just 21 points. Capela, even against Steven Adams, played 31 minutes, 16 and 23. And what's most remarkable, it shows you how much Clint Capela has grown. You think back to the 2016-2017 playoff series between these two teams in April of 2017. Clint Capela looked like a boy compared to Steven Adams, who was a man, one of the more physical, imposing bigs in the league. And if you remember, the Rockets had to lean on Nene. There was one game which he didn't even miss a shot in Oklahoma City to get past the Thunder in what was a five-game gentleman's sweep, but ultimately a lot of those games were very close, and in large part because the Rockets lost the battle on the interior, at least amongst the starting centers. Now, they did have some quality production off the bench from Nene. But today, Nene's 36 years old. He's not that player anymore. The Rockets have to rely on Clint Capela, and so to see Capela put up 16 and 23 against Steven Adams, out-rebounded Adams 23-7, it shows you how much Clint Capela continues to grow, because that was barely over a year and a half ago. That was April 2017. Now in December 2018, these same two players, both still in their primes, but it's remarkable. Certainly some of it is physicality. Capela continues to gain strength, but I think also Capela has such a good attitude. He learns from those negative experiences. The Rockets help him process that in a proper manner. It's not like he dwells on it. And so to see him in that matchup succeed to this extent, it's remarkable. And we said after they flipped the script Saturday, after being out-rebounded, what snapped the five-game losing streak in Miami, they lost the battle of the board 61-41, then flipped it to 58-43 against the Spurs. Well, while the Spurs are a pretty big team, they're not all that athletic. The Thunder, they are big and athletic. Not just Steven Adams, but Nerlens Noel, Jeremy Grant. There are so many big bodies. Even on the wings, you look at Paul George, Terrence Ferguson, even Russell Westbrook. everybody they throw out on the floor has considerable length and is capable of rebounding. So for a Rockets team that's been near the bottom of the league in defensive rebounding all year long, they actually won that tonight 37-34. So it wasn't like they just crashed the offensive glass. No, they won by being better at their biggest weakness on the season. It starts with Clint Capela, because I don't care who you play, 23 rebounds is massive. And to do it against that team, it's remarkably impressive, and it shows you for Clint individually how much he has stepped forward in his learning curve. It's helped the Rockets, because without Chris Paul out 2 to 3 more weeks with the strained left hamstring, the Rockets are not going to be a high-octane offensive attack. James Harden scored 41 points, but he had to do it on 35 shots because, well, he's not going to be able to be efficient because there just aren't that many shot creators right now for the Rockets. They're going to have to win games a bit ugly. And to see the Rockets execute late in the clutch, that's been something that's plagued them this season. Well, they went out and they won the fourth quarter 27-21. But when you look at 27-21, it's the 21 that stands out the most. And that starts with Clint Capela. But in addition to discussing Clint individually, I also want to throw out a hypothetical. I'm not sure how much I believe this, but I'm starting to. I know it's a small sample size of 2 games without Chris Paul. But is it possible that the Chris Paul injury is a blessing in disguise? And here's what I mean by that. The Rockets are certainly not better without Chris Paul. In fact, these last 2 games are the first 2 games they've won all year in games in which Chris did not start. They were previously 0-5, and they also lost the game in Miami in which he left early. So certainly Chris Paul, when he plays, even though he hasn't shot anywhere near his projected efficiency this year, he's still a very, very good player, and at times has the burst to take over a game. So they will miss him. But what I mean by a blessing in disguise is this. It felt like over the past month, when the Rockets had been by far the league's best offensive team, that they kind of coasted on that. Even in the 5-game winning streak, you think about the record-setting game with 26 made threes against the Wizards. Well, they gave up 118, they just scored 136. Really, ever since ditching Carmelo Anthony in mid-November, the Rockets have been the league's number one offense. They've been close to historically elite when you look at their efficiency, especially since James Harden started going God mode of late. And it seemed like that they almost were willing to coast on that. And that's not Chris Paul's fault, but I think the combination of losing Chris in Miami, the realization of how tough this schedule is coming up. Now, they started 2-0, but it's still not going to be easy. Your next game is against the Celtics on Thursday night. Then you've got the Pelicans on the road on Saturday. And then you've got the Grizzlies and Warriors next week. So it's going to be tough for a while. But I think when you're inside the Rockets locker room and you don't have Chris Paul, you see who's coming up next on your schedule, and then you're coming off a 61-41 disadvantage in the rebounding battle in the game in Miami that you lost by just 2 points. Any loose ball anywhere could have kept your winning streak going. Well, that snapped the winning streak. Now you don't have Chris Paul. You've got this tough schedule. The Rockets, all of a sudden, in my opinion, it feels like they realize that they just don't have the horses offensively to dominate to the level they need to on the offensive end to win games against this quality of competition. So I think it's certainly not Chris Paul's fault, but I think the combination of his injury, this schedule, and getting embarrassed the way they did in Miami, it seems like it jolted the Rockets into realizing that, hey, their defense, their effort, especially on the glass, because rebounding a lot of the time comes down to effort, it's got to be better because that's the only way they can win. So while I certainly don't think the Rockets are better without Chris Paul to beat teams like the Warriors, or even not the Warriors, let's say just the Thunder in the playoffs, you've probably got to have a more efficient offense to where you don't have to have James Harden scoring 41 on 35 shots. You've got to have more help, and that comes with getting Chris Paul back. But I think the goal for the Rockets, keep this level of attention on defense and especially rebounding, and then transfer that to when you get Chris Paul back in January, and that's when you might really have something. So no, I don't think the Rockets are better without Chris Paul, but I do think his injury, combined with the schedule, combined with the embarrassment on the glass in Miami, has kind of jolted this Rockets team into playing on defense and especially on the glass the way they need to play. Kudos to Clint Capela individually for taking the lead. 23 rebounds in back-to-back games is just Herculean. Also a good adjustment by Mike D'Antoni and Jeff Bezdelic, dropping him more. They're not having him exploited on the perimeter on switches as much as he was earlier this year when, for whatever reason, he's not as agile on the perimeter defensively as he used to be. Maybe he's a touch heavy. But in addition to playing down his weaknesses this year on the perimeter, you're also playing to his strength in terms of how he continues to get better as a defensive presence on the glass. So it's a good adjustment from the coaching staff. It's good to see Clint Capela take that level of individual responsibility. And you combine that with, I think, the sense of urgency that happened after the Chris Paul injury, and all of a sudden you've got a Rockets team that, even against a tough schedule, looks revitalized. They've won 7 of 8, and they're now 3 games over 500 for the first time all year. There's still a ways to go. 18-15 is not where the Rockets would have expected or wanted to be if you had asked them what their record would be on Christmas Day entering the season. After all, this is a team that lost 17 games in the entire 82-game slate a year ago. But for the first time in a while, it feels like that, at least emotionally, chemistry-wise, they are headed in the right direction. They are figuring it out. Now, ultimately, it's still going to be a tough schedule. They definitely need to get Chris Paul back to get back to where they want to be offensively. I don't know if you can count on God mode James Harden forever, but the combination of the Harden you have now, plus this renewed attention on the defensive glass led by Clint Capela, that's the formula with which the Rockets have won the last 2 games. They won 7 of 8 overall, but really it's these last 2 games without Chris Paul that really encourages me, again, improving them to 18-15 on the year. The loss drops the Thunder to 21-12. Now, jumping back into our 3 points recap, we spent much of the initial segment discussing the Rockets' attention to detail on the glass, because really, when you look at the season as a whole, that's where the Rockets, especially defensive rebounding, have lagged the most. So to see them out-rebound the Thunder, not just overall 54-52, but 37-34 on the defensive backboards, that's incredible, especially considering the Thunder have so many big bodies. Steven Adams, Nerlens Noel, even the wing players, Paul George, Jeremy Grant, they just throw length at you everywhere. And so to see the Rockets led by Clint Capela with 23, besting Steven Adams, his old nemesis, who had just 7 in 37 minutes, that's really encouraging. But at the end of the day, without the presence of James Harden, the reigning MVP, and yes, should be back-to-back MVP, I'm saying that with the Rockets playing the Thunder and 2016-2017 winner Russell Westbrook on Christmas Day in this 113-109 win by the Rockets, if not for Harden doing the heavy lifting offensively, the defensive effort still wouldn't have been enough. And we start off discussing the defensive effort, the rebounding, because that's what's lagged for most of the year. But to see James Harden take on the workload that he has and continue to drop 40-plus point games, that's remarkable. In this one, I know the efficiency isn't trademark James Harden. He shot 35 times, made 15 of those. By the way, Harden got to the line just 7 times compared to 10 for Westbrook. So for all the crying NBA Twitter does and some of the national pundits about Harden getting too many free throws, actually he got 3 fewer than Russell Westbrook today and yet scored 20 more points. That's how dominant Harden can be. He had to take 35 shots because, well, without Chris Paul, as we mentioned, the offense isn't going to be pretty, especially against a Thunder team that's big inside. They have so many long athletes on the perimeter. Without Chris Paul, the Rockets just don't have that many pieces that can create their own offense. But James did what he had to do. He adapted and scored 41 points. Again, without Chris Paul, even though the Rockets have been close to the top offense in the league for really over a month now, it's not going to be as efficient. That's just the way it is when you lose a Hall of Fame point guard. So it's going to take some volume shooting, and as with the rebounding, you've just got to survive in advance. And perhaps the most encouraging part is that we saw James Harden shut the door late. He checked back in when the Rockets were up just a point with 7:55 left in the game. The period that swung it, the Rockets were up 96-95 and Harden checked back in. Over the next 2 minutes, the Rockets went on an 8-0 run that put them up 9, I believe their biggest lead of the game. And from then on out, the Rockets were playing from in front. Got a little bit hairy in the final minute, but when it got to 2 and the Rockets had the ball when they're under 30 seconds left, it was James Harden who made the plays. They overplayed him on the perimeter, so there wasn't going to be the step back 3 that he hit against the Spurs the other night. Okay, well, he proves he had the mid-range game. He couldn't hit the 3, he couldn't get to the basket because of the presence of Steven Adams, so he had to toss in a 5 or 6 foot floater on the move, and he did that. That put the Rockets up 2 possessions with only 20 seconds left in the game, and that iced it. So again, you go back to the turning point of the season for me with the Rockets. It was that loss in Dallas. That was the last game before this current stretch, which they won 7 of 8. And if you think back, they had an 8-point lead late. That was when Luka went on his crazy run. But as far as what the Rockets could control, while Luka was going on that ridiculous 11-0 push, Chris Paul missed 2 free throws. Harden had an air ball. Eric Gordon missed 2 good looks from 3 that would have tied it in the final 30 seconds. The Rockets didn't control what they could control, and at the time, they were just 2-4 in so-called clutch situations, games within 5 points in the final 5 minutes. Since then, they have flipped it in a big way. This is two consecutive games that really, in the final 3 minutes, could have gone either way, and the Rockets got both of them. And that's going to be ultra important because, for a number of reasons, the Rockets aren't the juggernaut they were a year ago. And even if they somehow recapture a lot of that form, they're certainly still not going to be big enough on paper to just outplay the Warriors in terms of talent. They're going to have to execute. If you think back to the Western Conference Finals a year ago, when the Rockets were up 3-2 and seemingly a hamstring away, it wasn't like Game 4 and Game 5 were pretty, that the Rockets just dominated. No, the Rockets just made more plays in the fourth quarter, and it was there for the taking. And the Rockets, too often early this year, they hadn't gotten it done. And I think, you know, if you ask the Rockets, I think they would probably say that the game before what happened in Dallas, the embarrassment in Utah when they were down by 30-plus points, was when they started playing with better effort, because really the game in Dallas, they were up by 8 with 3 minutes left. So even though they let it go late, the effort overall was good. The Mavs, a much improved team this year, especially at home in Dallas. But even though the effort was improved, that's only part of the equation. The other part was clutch play. And it just seemed like since that game in Dallas, since that meltdown, during this current stretch with 7 of 8, really, other than the Miami game, which, it was the second night of a back-to-back, they were fatigued. Also, Harden took a hard shot in his eye, which swelled up after the game. He clearly wasn't himself. Other than that, the Rockets have owned the key inflection points, especially late in games, and that's what they're going to have to save this season. So yes, James Harden has to be a volume shooter right now. There's no other way around it. Kudos to him for putting up 41. And again, he didn't get his free throws tonight. He really just made 5 of 16, which is below his average from 3. Well, he just adapted, and even though the free throws weren't there, even though the three-pointers weren't there, okay, well, he took 19 shots inside the arc and made over 50%, 10 of those, even against a Oklahoma City team that has all sorts of rim protection with Steven Adams and Nerlens Noel, so it's not like there were really that many layups, certainly not any dunks for James to be had. So to see the Rockets adjust with James individually taking on even more of a workload without Chris Paul, but then I think especially in the clutch, when the games have been there for the taking in the fourth quarter, that is what has changed, and that's what gives the Rockets the most confidence. Because even when they're right, the rest of the Western Conference is getting better, the Rockets aren't as good defensively, and I think there are a variety of reasons for that. It's not just Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, but they're not suddenly going to become a top five defense again. They're not just going to have the enormous talent advantage they did a year ago. So to get back to anywhere close to the level of results, they can't be what they were earlier in the month, which was 2-4 in clutch situations. They can't have these other deficiencies and then compound them with not winning the games that are 50-50 for the taking late. And those are games which, on paper, when you have the MVP of the league, you should be able to get. This is a game defined by individual stars, especially late in high-profile matchups such as the Thunder on Christmas Day. You're not going to get that many free throws. The Rockets just 17 as a team. You've just got to have dominant players go out and make plays late. And that's what James Harden has increasingly done over this stretch, which the Rockets have won 7 of 8 games. So he deserves all the credit in the world. He outscored Russell Westbrook 41-21. Also, I thought Harden played pretty good defense. He had a couple of steals, a block, but we actually saw Harden switched on to Steven Adams in the post a lot, and he surprisingly held his own. As mentioned, a couple of the steals, some nice pokeouts. He didn't really get burned on rotations that much. That was a big part of how the Rockets gave up only 21 points in the fourth quarter. And really, you look at that 8-0 run they went on between the 7:55 mark and about the middle of the, about 5:30, when the Rockets took control of this game to go up 104-95. Well, the Rockets did it not just offensively, but nearly 3 minutes of basketball without even giving up a point. So James Harden, not just offensively, but defensively as well. The Rockets are succeeding again, really, ever since that Dallas game. That could have put the Rockets in a bad place mentally. Instead, they seem to have responded the way you would like a contender to do. If they're going to win a championship, you can't just fade at the first sign of adversity. And they seem to be owning that whatever happened early on in the season in terms of their decrease in clutch performance. A year ago, this was one of the best teams in the league in those situations. Well, over the past couple of weeks, it has dramatically reversed, really, ever since that Saturday in Dallas. And kudos to a team led by James Harden. Again, as mentioned, I think he continues to grow, not just in terms of his physical game, but mentally as well. And he took the challenge head on. And so certainly physically, he's having to take on an even bigger workload without Chris Paul. He's doing that. But also mentally, he's got to lead the team in these games that are there for the taking late. The Rockets aren't good enough to coast. They're going to have to, especially in the stretch without CP3, steal some. Well, that's what James Harden is having them do for two consecutive games. When the games have been in the balance in the fourth quarter, the Rockets, led by James Harden, even against great players like Russell Westbrook and Paul George, Westbrook had 21. Paul George had 28 and 14. Really, PG's been the best player on the Thunder this season, and a big part of why they're 21 and 12. But the Rockets, somehow, despite this ugly start to the year, they're now just three games back of the Thunder in the standings, and the Thunder have been near the top of the Western Conference the entire year. That shows you that the Rockets, despite how much they've struggled, the parity of the Western Conference gives them an opportunity. Now a season best three games over 500, and with James Harden playing like the MVP again, as good as last year or even better, then yeah, suddenly, even without Chris Paul, it's hard not to feel pretty good about this basketball team. That's what the presence of an MVP does, and especially in close moments late, which is what James has excelled at over this current stretch with 7 wins in 8 games. Final point as we conclude our 3 points recap. We spent a lot of the second segment discussing James Harden, who executed in the clutch on both ends of the floor. The Rockets trailed entering the fourth quarter. Before today, the Rockets had just won one game in which they trailed after the third quarter all year. Well, now they have two, outscoring the Thunder 27-21. The Rockets did in the final period. James Harden led the way because he's the MVP, scored 41 points overall. That's what he does. But perhaps the two biggest shots, when things got stagnant for the Rockets late, it was a pair of threes from newcomer Austin Rivers, who played 31 minutes in his first game with the team. 10 points, actually had the best plus-minus on the entire floor for the Rockets at +6. And not just 10 points, 3 of 6 shooting, made 2 of his 3 from behind the arc, including both in the final 4 minutes. So yes, he's capable of embracing the big moments. That's something you want to see from your role players. But he also had a big part in denying Russell Westbrook. Westbrook had just 21 points on 6 of 20 shooting with 6 turnovers. He was very inefficient, and the on-ball defense of Austin Rivers was a big reason why. And I wanted him a week ago, even before Chris Paul went out, and now that Chris Paul is on the shelf, it made too much sense not to happen. I know the backstory between Rivers and the Rockets, but this is an opportunity for redemption for both parties. Because Rivers a year ago, I know a lot of folks don't like him, but his numbers, scoring 15 points a game with the Clippers, 38% from behind the arc. He was good in isolation. He's a good on-ball defender, which we saw against Russell Westbrook. He's only 26 years old. I know he's been in the league a while, but that's because he came in after just one season at Duke. This is a guy who can play quality defense, certainly much better than Brandon Knight, who didn't play. Basically, the Rockets went with an 8-man rotation, with Rivers taking the minutes that had previously gone to Knight, because really, Knight's just not ready. He's trying to knock off rust. Hopefully, you can get him minutes here or there, but in a game like Christmas Day against the Thunder, you can't afford to waste minutes on basically an experiment. So the Rockets turned to Rivers, and it speaks volumes that a guy who they just signed off the street yesterday played 31 minutes. And then only 31 minutes, he seemed to embrace the biggest moments. And that's where the pedigree that I think comes with his name, obviously his father formerly played in the NBA, now coached with the Clippers. He's had a big target on his back really ever since coming in the league, played at Duke, which makes everyone a villain, especially the stars there. Then the combination of both father and son in Los Angeles. He's had a lot thrown at him, and I get why a lot of folks think, especially when he's not on your team, that he's a bit annoying. But one thing that comes with that, if you're going to take on those headwinds and succeed, which again, last year, he made his threes, he was good in isolation, he was good in terms of on-ball defense. These are all things the Rockets need. He's not a pure point guard, but he can at least handle the ball, which is something the Rockets need without Chris Paul. He feels like a good system fit, especially under Mike D'Antoni. So to see him have the success he had late in the game, both in terms of one-on-one defense against Russell Westbrook and making those two big threes, it shows you that he embraces the moment, much like we saw from Gerald Green a year ago. And when you're a team like the Rockets with these kind of expectations, what you need from your role players are guys that step up, that embrace the stage. And even though it's one game, I'm feeling good about Austin Rivers. And really, you look back through his career, he would not have succeeded and gotten through the turmoil, because really he had a slow start out of the box in New Orleans, wasn't very good. But really, when you consider the headwinds, everything that's been thrown at him, the expectations, and to see him just slowly and subtly improve, that shows you it's a guy that is mentally tough. And that's what you want out of your role players. Grit, toughness. That's what defines Gerald Green, PJ Tucker. And I know Austin Rivers has been a Rocket for just one game, but it feels like he has that too. And then when you combine it with his physical traits, again, he's a good isolation player. He can hit threes. He's a good on-ball defender. I think this is going to be a great signing, and it's why I advocated him for him really ever since he was let go. He was sent from Washington to Phoenix to make the math work on the Trevor Ariza deal. Ironically, Trevor doing the Rockets a favor here, because ultimately Phoenix having to trade, well, to get rid of Ariza to Washington, then taking back Kelly Oubre, making just $3 million last year of his rookie deal, that's the guy they wanted. Austin Rivers, a veteran on an expiring $12 million contract. Really, the Suns just had no choice but to let him go unless they wanted to just keep a player they're probably not going to retain after the season anyway on a team that's basically in tank mode and wanting to evaluate young players. They did the deal for Oubre because he fits more with them. So they let Rivers go, and I think it's a perfect marriage for both Rivers and the Rockets. Really, it's a good scheme fit for him. But also, when Chris Paul went down, the Rockets clearly needed another ball handler. So I think it's a good opportunity for Rivers, and I think it's also really a nice challenge, because even though we mentioned the numbers he had a year ago with the Clippers, well, this year in Washington, he had been largely dreadful, and it's a contract year. He needs to get paid next summer, and what he did this season simply was not good enough. And, you know, you wonder how much of it being on kind of a dysfunctional Washington team that's lost a ton of games, locker room somewhat in shambles. That's why they brought in Trevor Ariza to try and stabilize that, and that John Wall and Bradley Beal led team. Well, whatever the reason, just as the Rockets need some help in terms of bodies, really they've been deficient in terms of depth all year long, and now without Chris Paul, they certainly need more ball handling. But for Rivers, he needs something in this contract year, and the Rockets signing him for the minimum, he's going to be a free agent next summer. Maybe he needs something to kind of snap him out of the malaise, if you will. And all of a sudden being thrust onto a contender again. Not that the Clippers were a contender last year, but they were at least above 500, a good team. And I think for a guy like that to all of a sudden go to a bad team in Washington, coming off the bench, not really in a role or a scheme that he really embraces, it can make it challenging. So I think putting him in Houston, certainly the Rockets need Austin, but I think Austin needs the Rockets as well. I know there's a funny backstory. There's the whole tunnel incident, the taunting that happened between the Rockets and Clippers last year. I know it, but sometimes it's about maturity. You have to look past that. And from a basketball standpoint, both the Rockets and Austin Rivers need one another. And really, the Rockets needed depth all season long. And then after losing Chris Paul, it became clear to me that Austin Rivers was the best guard on the free agent market, the best pedigree out there. Kudos to the Rockets and Tillman Fertitta for using that extra roster spot, for bringing him in. And really, as we close out the podcast, let's give some love to Daryl Morey. Because for all that's happened this year, we've discussed the depth issues over and over again. How after the 9 or 10 spot, the Rockets seem to fall off a cliff depth-wise whenever there are a couple of injuries. And that's been very frustrating early in the year. But the upside, as I said, is that actually long-term, on paper, that's one of the easiest things to fix. Last year, they brought in Gerald Green mid-season, who was a key difference maker. This year, they brought in Daniel House earlier this month, and now House is a fixture in the starting lineup for the time being. House, on Tuesday, on Christmas Day against the Thunder, had 9 points, made 2 of 4 from behind the arc, and was +5, which was next best on the Rockets after Austin Rivers, who was +6. So you bring in Gerald Green last year, who's still with the team. You bring in Daniel House Jr. this year. And now, on Christmas Eve, you bring in Austin Rivers. Those are three members of your current 8-man rotation who you've gotten, for the minimum, off the scrap heap during the last 2 seasons. You know how hard it is, especially at the level the Rockets are wanting to play at being a contender, to find role players for the minimum during the season? That's how good Daryl Morey and his staff are at talent identification. And yes, they whiffed over the summer. They're certainly not perfect. Look at the roster spots still occupied by Carmelo Anthony and Michael Carter-Williams, and that's had a lot to do with the Rockets' slow start this year. So I get the frustration. Daryl does need to be held accountable for his mistakes in the offseason. He's the first to admit those. However, in the grand scheme, if your weakness is your depth and your GM is Daryl Morey, on paper, that should be pretty easy to fix. Because this is a guy, this is 3 times now, Gerald Green, Daniel House, Austin Rivers, where the Rockets, with basically no resources, have found difference makers in this rotation. So that's the upside for the Rockets. They've had a lot of problems this year, but if you believe that depth is one of their biggest, and I firmly believe that, I've said that over and over this year, then on paper, that's one of the easiest things to fix. And on Christmas Day against the Thunder, Clint Capella with 16 and 23, James Harden with 41, certainly they're the headliners, but to see the Rockets just scrapping, clawing, and then you see Austin Rivers with his defense against Russell Westbrook. You see Daniel House playing over 25 minutes and hitting a couple of big threes in the third quarter. It reminds you that when your GM is Daryl Morey, if depth is your weakness, that's fixable. So kudos for the Rockets. Certainly as a team, Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, Chris Paul, the Brain Trust, I'm sure they all had to sign off on bringing in Austin Rivers, even though he's an obvious basketball fit. Kudos to them for bringing him in on Christmas Eve. Certainly there were some past histories they had to look past, but it's all about what's in the best interest of the basketball team. So kudos to the leadership for knowing what's in their best interest and adapting, even if personally there might be a bit of a clash. And ultimately, the Rockets are all downplaying that. Rivers, from what I could tell, being at Toyota Center on Christmas Day, seems to be fitting in with his new teammates very well. So kudos to leadership of the team, but also leadership organizationally, because that's three times now, Green, House, and Rivers, that the Rockets have brought in difference makers during the season these last 2 years. So if depth is your concern, if you believe that's what's been a big problem for the Rockets through this, even now, 18-15, disappointing start, then ultimately, I think you should feel pretty good, because give Daryl Morey enough tries, he's going to find some rotation players on the cheap, really, over the balance of his 10-plus seasons as a GM in the NBA. That's one of the things that he has done best. I know he missed a couple of times with Carmelo Anthony and Michael Carter-Williams over the summer. No one's perfect, but by and large, this is still a very big strength of Daryl Morey as a GM, and to see Austin Rivers contribute immediately with just one practice the way he did, Mike D'Antoni trusting him, too, for 31 minutes. Kudos to MDA for that. And also to see Daniel House continue to thrive, second straight start since the Rockets lost Chris Paul. Yeah, it's nice for the team, and it reflects well on their leadership and culture, but also I think it reflects well on Daryl Morey, and it reminds you that, hey, even though he missed a couple with Melo and MCW, he's still pretty damn good at his job. And if depth is your problem, give Daryl Morey enough swings, enough time, and ultimately he's going to make it happen, especially if Tillman Fertitta is willing to spend and eat the money for using a few more roster spots. And thankfully, Tillman seems to be willing to do that to save the season, which the Rockets certainly appear to be at least in the process of doing. Now a season-best 3 games over .500 and having won 7 of their past 8 basketball games, culminating with Christmas Day's 113-109 win over the Oklahoma City Thunder. So on that positive note, this is where we will leave off. As always, I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in. If you want more content before our next show, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. My handle is simply my name. The show is on there at Locked on Rockets. And also check out Locked on NBA Net. That's the curated feed for a Locked on NBA Network, both on Twitter and Instagram. Experts, not just myself here in Houston, but our Locked On hosts all across the NBA. They can give you local insight. So if you want to hear about what's going on with the Celtics before Thursday night's big Houston-Boston game, another national TV game, well, check out Locked On Celtics, which, of course, you can follow them or subscribe to them. But easier way to do, just go to that Locked On NBA Net Twitter or Instagram handle, and you'll get a nice curated feed with experts all across the association. Also, I mentioned the Locked On Podcast Network. Well, I've got local experts across the NBA, NFL, that includes the Houston Texans, even some Major League Baseball and college sports. So if you want to check out shows beyond just my own at Locked On Rockets, I strongly encourage you to do so. Whether you're looking for me or other shows, you can find all of us at basically your platform provider of choice, your listening station, that is, because with so many great host with such a great network that enables better distribution. So iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, so on and so forth, wherever you listen, odds are you can find Locked On Rockets or Locked On any NBA, NFL, even some Major League Baseball and college sports teams. So search for those shows, subscribe. That's how you get episodes right when they come out. And also, if you'd be kind enough to leave a 5-star review, then that's how we keep the business model rolling, by looking attractive to potential advertisers and keep this thing running as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, we're increasingly doing more work with voice assistant programs, so if you'd be kind enough, if you use voice assistant on your phone while you're in the car driving or anything else, just say play podcast Locked On Rockets, play podcast Locked On Texans, or really play podcast anything, and if it's on the Locked On Podcast Network, you should find it. So again, we're not just on the iTunes and Stitchers and Google Plays of the world, we're also working with voice assistant as well, so all of those are ways you can find our episodes on a regular basis. Also, if you've got any questions for me, suggestions for the show, or advertising inquiries, you've got a rapidly growing audience, especially with the Rockets playing as well as they are, and we've got great introductory specials, please contact me at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. That's a great way to get in touch. Also, facebook.com/lockedonrockets. You can send a message on there, but all those are ways that you can, again, make advertising inquiries or just ask me a question about the team or make a suggestion for the show. Whatever the case, I would be glad to hear from you. So with the plugs out of the way, let's say the happy final one last time from Toyota Center. Rockets 113, Thunder 109. On that note, Merry Christmas. Enjoy the rest of it, Rockets fans. And I'll be back with you later in the week as the Rockets get ready for the Celtics and continue this tough stretch without Chris Paul. There's still a ways to go, but so far, so good. 2-0 without Chris, 7-8 overall. And both of the wins without Chris against the Spurs and the Thunder. Again, Rockets 7-8 overall, and now a season best, 3 games over .500 at 18-15. On that positive note, folks, enjoy the rest of your Christmas. Have a happy holiday. And please come back soon and check out more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.